You're listening to Confess Radio, and brought to you by Confess Global Community Film Festival, and that's confess.com. Today, it's an honor and a privilege to be speaking with Mr. Haskell Wexler, in L.A., in California, a man who has changed the whole landscape of filmmaking, in my impression, of cinematography and directing as well, an award-winning, Academy Award-winning filmmaker and lifelong activist. And he will be premiering his film called 4 Days in Chicago, which is about the Occupy movement that happened in 2012. And apart from that, here's a man who has done so much for the world in cinema. And he has been involved as a cinematographer on films like In the Heat of the Night, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Bound for Glory. He has won Emmy Awards. He has recently won the Independent Spirit Award for Best Cinematographer. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are going to be speaking with Haskell Wexler. Haskell, thank you so much for speaking with us today. And let me repeat the question. What's the weather like down there, and what are you feeling like today?
Well, I'm feeling like I'm feeling physically very good. Thus far, a little depressed by our drive to war, and how there hasn't been any discussion of it, really, the way apparently the British are more in touch with their democracy vis-a-vis whether bombing Syria will help the world or help the people of Syria. So, it is a little disturbing.
Well, Tommy, tell us about your film, 4 Days in Chicago. What's the story?
Well, the story relates actually to what's happening today, in a way, is that President Obama has decided that NATO, the war-making body that we're the leader of, was going to meet in our hometown, Chicago. And it's also Obama's declared hometown. And that when it was announced that the city of Chicago was going to act in protection of that meeting and the meeting of Occupy people and others who feel that the resources of the U.S. should not be going to war, but to going to a failing educational system, a failing health system, and all the great things that are potential in our government. So that the city decided that they're not going to do what they did in 1968 and have a police riot, which was in our film Medium Cool, but that they were going to protect the image of the city from these other people, these outsiders who are there to make trouble. And so so I decide, since the papers in Chicago mentioned my name and Medium Cool and 68 and how the present mayor was gonna handle things differently, I decided to go back and cover that event to see what's happening. And that's sort of the background for the film 4 Days in Chicago.
Thank you very much for that, Haskell. I'd like to know, why was there resistance, even from the mayor of Chicago, to the movement?
Well, once you set the theater of fear, which he did by referring to the people that were coming from around the country, as well as in Chicago as well, to demonstrate their opposition to more war making, that he had to act as a strong person that would make sure that these people don't disrupt things too much. And the general public was in fear. They closed schools. Friends of mine who really wanted to know more about what Occupy was about lived in apartment buildings where they hired special security people with guns to walk up and down to make sure that there wouldn't be any rioting or disturbance or violence, sort of protecting the city from people expressing their opinions. And why the mayor did it was because the mayor of Chicago was very close to Obama and apparently very close to a rather aggressive military-ordered regime.
Let me ask you then, Haskell, has the film turned out the way you envisioned it at the beginning?
It surprised me in a good way. Is when I make documentaries, I don't want to go in the way a lot of documentaries have to be made. Go in and get what you want. You have to go in there and with somewhat of an open mind and want what you get. And with my camera and some other Chicagoans who were filmmakers from California who are ex-Chicagoans, Andy Davis and Mike Gray, who are native Chicagoans and who've also made a lot of Hollywood movies, that we, in shooting, we gave face to the people, nurses, veterans, students, who were in the streets meeting against further plotting of more wars, but to show that they're just people like all of us with, you know, with mothers and fathers and kids, whichever kids, because one way if you keep the city afraid of the invisible, and then they can live with heavy-duty militarized police to protect them. And I mean good people. The cops have to keep law and order. So as far as filmmaking goes, I think filmmakers have to be on the streets more, have to talk to people more, because the media has ignored them and just looks for the event. In the case of Chicago, there was very little violence per se, and a lot of it sort of aggravated by the police intimidation, which I saw, and that the regular media was set in certain places where they did get some shots of some cops beating on kids, and perhaps there were some unfriendly words there, but the media needs that kind of show without going into content at all and without saying what NATO was meeting about and what the people felt that the people needed and wanted and deserved as Americans who want the country to meet our needs and not meet the needs of warfare. So what I did find is the people I talk to and people you'll see in the film are real people and not just some what they call activists, the bad word activists. They're people who take democracy seriously.
I'm glad that you decided to humanize the issue, as every documentary filmmaker must, to humanize the issue. And that has been done in your film, I take it?
Well, I hope so. I think the film is open-ended and wants people to have discussion and to say what are our priorities. And I think that the media limits the frame of what we consider our priorities are in relation to current plans for a warlike thing. The frame is, did somebody use chemical weapons or not? It's the question is not what God, what law, what motivated says that the United States of America's military power can be used to supposedly correct a horrendously bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
They won't go to the content. They'll go to the small frame that seems like our Congress is now dealing with.
You know, Haskell, many of the audience members of ComFest will be aspiring young documentary filmmakers. Do you have any secrets to pass on to them as they begin their journey?
One primary thing is be connected, know people, be out there and talk and listen to people that may not agree with you with what we call politically, but do not arbitrarily accept what I call corporate media totally. You have to listen to it because you know what's been fed to people, but if you just don't have time to know what's going on, then if you make documentaries, it's less than what documentaries are supposed to be. It's less what journalism mostly, because journalism is, documentaries should be good journalism, and that requires, number one, of course, to know your tools. You have to know your cameras. You have to know what kind of stories. You mentioned humanizing. Certainly, people respond to interactions of individuals and so forth, and when it gets up into what you call political type things, our minds either go off completely or they go quickly into one camp or the other camp, and that's not good. It's not good for documentaries, and it's not good for people. So my advice to them is live a life, and also that there's more to life than having a career.
Curiosity is pretty important.
Yeah, interest, connection. Don't just accept the given, because that's if you're good enough to be able to tell a story with a camera, then the story should have some closeness to what you believe in, and not necessarily what. And also, you should be open to find out that you don't believe so much of what what you think you believe in, but you can do. I finished a series called The Bus Riders Union, and I learned so much about not just myself and hundreds of people in Los Angeles who use the buses for to go to and from work and for life, that I'm a better citizen because I know more about the people I live with. And if I can know more about it, I can be more what I call civilized. And also it gives me capacity to be a better filmmaker, even a better dramatic filmmaker. You know,
Haskell, so much of what we call show business or documentary or feature is built on relationships and friendships. Can you tell us about your relationship and friendship with Norm Jewison, how you met and how it has evolved?
Well,
because Norm's a Canadian.
I talked to Norman yesterday, as a matter of fact. And when I just said after the end of all the talk that we've had about Martin Luther King and all the conference about the civil rights movement, And I said to Norman, you know, I think it's a good time for me and you and Hal Ashby and Marlon Brando and all the other people who were working in Hollywood to know that who were marching in Selma and being with the civil rights movement and so forth, and how that brotherhood of black and white made for progress in Norman, I said, I want you to make sure that your kids know that about you, because you should be proud, and you should be proud that you're a good filmmaker, so you could express some of that in the films you made. Because, you know, besides In the Heat of the Night that Norman directed, which if you look at today, you laugh at it. You say, what the hell is so revolutionary about that? And you realize at that time, it was considered far out, certainly for a Hollywood film, you know? And Norman made another film called The Russians Are Coming during the Cold War, where there was no such thing as a funny Russian, per se. But Alan Arkin played a Russian who came ashore here, and it sort of said, look, at the Russians are people, too. It's not a matter of who's going to bomb who first for mutually assured destruction. And Norman did that through his art. And I was just reminding him he should be proud of himself.
We're very proud of him up here, and thank you for endorsing that. Let me get back a little bit to the Occupy movement just before we sign off. Has the Occupy movement been as successful as you had envisioned all over the world? What's it done? How has it changed things, do you think?
Well, it's strange that it's called the Occupy movement, but what it is it reflects the realization of people all over the world that the system's not working for them. It's not working for them, and it's not them. It's not their individual failings. For so long, that's how most Americans have said, you know, what the hell, what's wrong with me? I went to school, I know this, I'm good at it, but I must have missed the boat. I didn't smile enough to write for the employer. So the Occupy movement is a general upset with societal priorities, where the 1% is running the show, and a real ear is not given to the people. And that's been in the streets of Egypt. It's been in the streets of all over the world, and in many streets in America, which is not reported by the conventional media. The number of cities who've stood up against the banks who have screwed them on their house mortgages, the health insurance, the system which is failing, a school and education system which is either out of whack or failing or moving to privatization. Sending people to jail for nonviolent crimes by the millions more than anywhere, so that the system is not working, and so the what we call the Occupy movement is called attention to all these issues, and you'll see in the film nurses, even nurses who work for the Veterans Administration, saying that there's no money, there's no concentration really to treat even our veterans. No one can say there's a success. No? But there is a movement, and it's there, and it has to be recognized.
I'll tell you what, Haskell, let me ask you in conclusion, what's the secret? What makes you tick after all these years on this earth? What makes you tick when you get up in the morning? What has made you tick all along in your career and private life?
Well, actually, I don't know. I could probably say my mom used to put a star on the refrigerator when I was a good boy. And she also was critical of me if I didn't eat everything on my plate, because she said, remember the starving Armenians. And I guess if you're some kind of psychiatrist or something, you might say that my mom had a lot to do with the crazy kind of guy I am. But that's about as close as I can get.
Well, you know, Haskell, we know that you're not as young as you look. That's for sure. You're a young man still burning with fire. What's next in your profession? What project is upcoming next for you, if you thought about it?
Well, I'm continuing work. We have a movement, believe it or not, in show business, entertainment, you know. Normal working hours are 14, 15 hours, normal scheduled working hours with short turnaround, and with traffic situations now where people spend an hour or two just going to and from work. And it's killing people, not just on the highway, but it's what we've learned, that sleep deprivation makes you susceptible to all kinds of diseases in a serious nature. And yet we continue to do that. And so we've had a campaign on to, which is expressed in my documentary, Who Needs Sleep? And we have a campaign on to for better hours. And within that campaign comes the visibility about the whole system not being set up for life and for family and for quality of life, but mostly to feed a profit system, which is not interested in those things.
Almost everything in life is really political, whether it's the human condition or politics itself, a film, documentary film.
The other thing I wanted to get at, when you mentioned the word political, I used the word activist before, and I also talked about extreme hours and tying in why our view about the environment, our view about what we can and can't do, and that it has to come from a fundamental philosophy, and the philosophy goes beyond what we normal thinking of it. Political, because political usually means what's practical, what we can get done. And the limits of what we get done are limited by a philosophy that puts profit ahead of human values. And that expresses itself in all aspects of our life, and it expresses itself in our own subjective misunderstanding that to own more, to have more, to consume more, to shop more will make us happy. And it doesn't work that way.
Well, you know, we're very happy here and proud here at ComFest to premiere your film. Canada and the United States are neighbors. What's your impression of Canada just before we say goodbye?
Well, young Americans who did not want to go to that war, but the Vietnamese call the American War, they went to Canada. And Canada, we've thought of always as a better functioning democracy. But as all functioning democracies, they also are, I hesitate to use the word capitalist, but they are intimately tied with U.S. business, and as such, many of the overt political decisions that are made in Canada may not be good for the Canadians. But still, I do think that that Canada has a closer touch with their people and with their land and with more of the they're a little closer to being less a colony than we are. I don't know whether Canada celebrated the birth of the royal kid as thoroughly as our media did, but
let's not forget that Norm is a Canadian.
Yeah.
He might be listening here. Yeah. Well, you know.
But look at certainly, I think I have a subjective affection for Canada and Canadians outside of those high-floating philosophic things I've been throwing at you.
Well, you know something? You've given us a chance, an opportunity through your films to see ourselves on screen, whether good, bad, or ugly. You're holding up that mirror, and we see ourselves, and that is therapy. And thank you very much, Haskell. I hope we
thank you for the interview.
Yeah.
Thank you for the interview.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. Okay, I hope you cut it. Bye.
All right. And that was brought to you by Comfest Radio and Comfest Global Community Film Festival. You can find them at comfest.com. And Haskell's film will be presented on Thursday evening, September the 12th at 9:45 p.m. at the Rainbow Theater, Jarvis and Front Streets in Toronto. Thank you.